I want to continue in volume 5, and this sharing will complete volume 5. I want to pick up in October the 18th, 1903. Sin is an act of the human will opposed to the divine. Now, that's one of the very fundamental teachings we need to understand so that we fight sin more than anything else. Louisa said, "Continue in my usual state. I saw my adorable Jesus for short instants, and he told me, 'My daughter, do you know what forms sin or what makes sin? It is an act of the human will opposed to the divine. Imagine two friends who are in opposition. If the thing is light, you would say that their friendship is not perfect and loyal." Oh yeah, if the problem between them is not heavy, as distinct from anything else, you would say that the friendship is not perfect or loyal. Be even in little things, how can they love and yet oppose each other? True love is to live in the will of the other. So there is your definition of loving God, that true love is to live in the will of God, even at the cost of sacrifice. If then the dispute between you, the thing is grave as distinct from light, not only are they not friends, but they're fierce enemies. And that is what sin is. You make yourself an enemy of God. Opposing the divine will is the same as making God one's enemy. So I want to give you Philippians 3:18. You can be enemies of the cross of Christ. And Romans 5:10. Be it even in little things. And the problem is, you see, that people say, well, it's only a little thing, it's not important. But little things mean a lot, and they make up the details of everyday life. Even if it's in little things, it is always the creature who opposes the creator. And that is the enormity of the event, because our planet is only a speck of a speck of a speck in the universe. And we are such tiny creatures that you have to be at tree level before you will actually see us. So if we're such minuscule creatures and we oppose the divine will, that is not a small event, it's major. So if we want to live in union with God, then we have to eliminate sin from our lives, and that is just the way it is. So October the 24th, 1903, this is an image that Louisa received of the church. As I told the confessor about my concerns, that my state may not be the will of God, and that at least as a test, I wanted to try and make an effort to go out of it to see whether I could manage or not without raising the usual difficulties, the confessor said, "All right, tomorrow you can try." So I was left as if I had been freed from this enormous weight. Now, after he celebrated Holy Mass and I received communion, I saw my adorable Jesus in my interior for just a little. His gaze fixed on me. Uh-oh. His hands joined in the act of asking for pity and help. At that moment, I found myself outside of myself, inside a room in which there was a lady. Now, this lady is an image of the church. She was majestic, and she was venerable, but gravely infirm. This is 1903. She was inside a bed with a headboard so high as to almost touch the vault. And I was forced to stay over this headboard in the arms of the priest in order to keep it still and to look at the poor sick one. While in this position, I saw a few religious people surrounding the lady, obviously, and offering their cares to the patient and saying among themselves with intense bitterness, "She's ill, she's ill. It would take nothing more than a little shake to kill her," understood. and I was taking care of keeping the headboard of the bed still for fear that if the bed moved, she might die. In seeing that things were dragging on and almost getting annoyed by that idleness, I said to the one who was holding me, "For pity's sake, let me down. I'm doing nothing good, nor am I helping anyone. Why stay here so useless?" Now, that's the problem she's having with her victim soul status. She feels that she's useless and she's not going anywhere. And the person holding her in their arms, is, of course, is the priest who is directing her and trying to keep her on the straight and narrow. "If I get down," she said, "that means go out of my victim state. At least I can serve her and help her." And he said, "Did you not hear that even a little shake could make her get worse?" In other words, are you not hearing what's actually being said to you? That the church is in such dire needs that if you shift from your position, it's going to be drastic. So did you not hear that even a little shake would make her get worse and cause most sad things to happen to her? If you get down, since there is nobody to keep the bed still, she may even die. So Louisa is being told that if she comes down from her victim status to just being an ordinary person, she's not going to have the ability to help the church that she has now. So Louisa said, "But how can it be possible that by just doing this, this good can come to her? I don't believe it." And this is Louisa really gravely in temptation now. "For pity's sake, let me get down." So after I repeated these words several times, he put me down on the floor, and by myself, with no one holding me, I drew near the ill one. Now, by myself, no one holding me, that means she's outside of obedience and she's outside of the will of God. She's back in her own will. I drew near the ill one, and to my surprise and sorrow, I saw that the bed was moving. At these movements, her face went blue. She trembled and emitted a death rattle. Those few religious were crying and saying, "There's no more time. She's in the extreme moments now." Then some enemies entered, soldiers and captains, to beat the one who was ill. And dying as she was, that lady got up with intrepidness and majesty to be wounded and beaten. "On seeing this, I trembled like a reed," Louisa said. "And I said to myself, I have been the cause of all this." We are our own worst enemies. And it really helps when we discover that, because then we will become more supple to receiving guidance from the Lord. "I've been the cause of all this. I myself have given the push for so much evil to happen. And I understood that the lady represented the church infirm in her members, with many other meanings, which it seems useless for me to explain because they can be understood by reading what I have written." And of course, she presumes everybody understands what she's thinking of, which we don't. "Then I found myself inside of myself, and Jesus told me in my interior, 'If I suspend you forever, the enemies, that is the demons, and also the human enemies of the church, will begin to make my church shed blood.'" Because this is 1903, and the Marxist communists want to destroy the church. And Louisa said, "Lord, it's not that I do not want to stay." She goes around this roundabout too often. "Heaven forbid that I move away from your will, even for the blink of an eye, only if you want me to." But he's told her endlessly that he does want it. "I will stay. If you don't want me to, I will get out." And he said, "My daughter, as soon as the confessor released you by telling you, 'All right, tomorrow you will try,' the bond of victim was released." That is very important. She needs to know the enormity of her decisions. And we have to find that out as well, that decisions that we make can have absolutely drastic consequences. Because only the freeze of obedience is what constitutes the victim. And so Louisa allowed herself to be released from obedience. "And I would never accept her," as a victim soul without this freeze of obedience, even at the cost of making a miracle of my omnipotence, if necessary, to give light to the one who directs you. Okay, so the Lord is saying that he would make absolutely certain that the priest would know what God wanted, so that he would give you this obedience. Louise has been told this many times, and I don't know if this is the last time. So, I suffered, Jesus said, and I suffered voluntarily. But what constituted me as victim was the obedience to my dear Father. That's John 14:31. I want the world to know that I love the Father, and therefore I do exactly as my Father tells me. So, what constituted me as victim was the obedience to my dear Father, who wanted to adorn all of my works, from the greatest to the smallest, with the honorary frieze of obedience. Then Louisa said, finding myself inside of myself, I felt a fear to try and go out. But then I snapped out of it, saying, the one who gave me this obedience should have thought about this. And besides, if the Lord wants me, I am ready. Now, you'd hope that's the last time she goes around the roundabout, but it may not be. Okay, so October the 25th, 1903, the soul in grace enamours God. Because grace, as you know from volume 2, Jesus said, I am grace. So that means the soul living in God, living in union with God, naturally enamours God. So there's quite a lot in the early volumes about grace. As the hour of my usual state came, I was thinking to myself that if the Lord would not come, I would try and make an effort to go out of that state. Oh no, she's not finished yet. Also to see whether at least I could manage it. At first I could manage, but then my adorable Jesus came and showed me that when I would think of remaining in it, he would draw near me and bind me to himself in such a way that I would not be able to go out. When, on the other hand, I would think of going out, he would move away and leave me free in such a way that I could do it. So I couldn't make up my mind, and I said to myself, how I wish I could see that confessor so as to ask him what I should do. Now, we who are looking at this objectively and not involved in the struggle can see clearly what she should do. But I mean, she's involved in the struggle of temptation and cannot see. Then a little later, I saw the confessor together with our Lord, and immediately I said, tell me, should I stay, yes or no? While saying this, I saw in the interior of the confessor that he had withdrawn the obedience he had given me the day before. And so I decided to stay. Now notice that right up even at this very high level, you still have to make the decision to go on in the divine will. You can't make the decision 10 years ago and presume that that's where it is still. If you took your spouse to the altar to take vows to live with this person for the rest of your days and to give yourself to this person, you do know you have to make that decision every day. 10 years later, the relationship would be dead and gone. It mightn't even take that. It might only take 2 or 3 years for the whole thing to work its way through. It has to be a commitment that's made on a daily basis. And that is so with every consecration. So Louisa said, I decided to stay, thinking to myself that it was true that he had withdrawn the obedience. Fine. If then it was my fantasy that made me see it, while it could be false, when the confessor would come, things would be taken care of, she said, and so I calmed down. And what you'd say is, I hope the weather forecast will be calmer. So the message she gets after this is actually very important, because it's all about grace. Then, continuing to make himself seen, Blessed Jesus told me, my daughter, the beauty of the soul in grace is so great as to enamour God himself, because grace is an outpouring of God into the soul. So God is seeing himself in the soul. the angels and the saints are amazed at seeing this prodigious portent of a soul still terrestrial, possessed by grace. It's 1 Corinthians 3:16. Know you not that you are the temple of the living God and that God dwells in you? At the fragrance of her celestial odour, that celestial odour is what the church calls the odour of sanctity, they run around her, and to their highest pleasure, they find in her the same Jesus that beatifies them in heaven. Because in volume 2, Jesus said, I am grace. So they find the same Jesus in the soul as they find in heaven, in such a way that it is indifferent to them whether to be up in heaven or down on earth near this soul. But who maintains and preserves this portent, giving new shades of beauty continuously to the soul who lives in my will? Who removes any rust and imperfection from her and administers to her the knowledge of the object that she possesses? Now, the thing that she possesses is the divine will. And so you have to keep studying the messages of Jesus in order to be able to somehow grasp it. And even after years of studying, we all know that we have got to go back again to the beginning and go over it and over it again to try and understand it deeper. Who strengthens her? Who establishes her and confirms her in grace? It is my will, Jesus said. The living in my will is the whole point of sanctity. Okay, so what is the point of sanctity? You need to put that down as a heading over your paragraph. What is the whole point of sanctity? And Jesus said, the living in my will. So the living in my will is the whole point of sanctity and gives continuous growth in grace. Now, it has to be continuous growth while we're on the earth, because when you leave the earth, your journey is finished and whatever you have achieved in terms of grace, that's it. You've had enough. It's very tragic for people to come to the point of death and not having anything in the bank of grace. However, one who one day does my will and another day does her own will never be confirmed in grace. Now, there you have it from the Lord himself. Confirmed in grace is that you are immutable like God. You are stable. You are not going to change. You're going to stay in this commitment and you're going to stay growing. So the person who does not does the will of God one day and not another will never be confirmed in grace. She does nothing but grow and then decrease, which is a waste of energy. And how much evil this brings to the soul, and how much evil, he says. Oh, how much glory she deprives God and herself of. Isn't that absolutely awful? Because the amount of grace in your soul is the amount of glory there will be on the other side. She is the image of one who today is rich and tomorrow is poor. She will be confirmed neither in riches nor in poverty. Isn't that interesting? Neither in riches nor in poverty, because she's shifting all the time from one to the other. Therefore, one cannot know where she will end up. Having said this, he disappeared. After a little while, the confessor came, and Louisa said, I told him what I have written. He assured me that he had truly withdrawn the obedience that he had given to me. Now, to obey the confessor, I continue telling the other meanings that I understood on the 24th of this month. So, the lady, in other words, she saw this image of the church and she said, everybody will understand it, so I don't need to say anything. And the priest said to her, nobody will understand what you're saying because you alone saw it. And you alone, therefore, can tell anybody what you saw. So she has to continue explaining the message about the church. So the lady that she saw represented the church, who is infirm, not in herself, but in her members. OK, Why is she not infirm in herself? Because John 15, the whole chapter, Jesus said from verse 1, I am the vine and you are my branches. So it's the branches of the vine that are infirm, not the vine itself. And even though she's laid low and insulted by enemies and rendered infirm in her very members, she never loses her majesty and venerability. As for the bed she is in, I understood that while the church seems oppressed, infirm, opposed, she yet rests in the perpetual and eternal rest that is in God, and with peace and safety. Now, you'll find all of this in Psalm 62 and Psalm 131. My soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. And Psalm 62 says, rest in God, my soul. So she rests in a perpetual and eternal rest and with peace and safety in the paternal bosom of God. Why is that? It's because Jesus the vine is in glory. Okay? It's only in her members on earth that she's in trouble. So yet she rests in with a perpetual and eternal rest and with peace and safety in the paternal bosom of God, like a child on the lap of its mother. That's Psalm 131. I understood that the headboard of the bed that touched the vault was the divine protection. Oh dear, look what Louisa dropped. That always assists the church, and that everything she contains has all come from heaven. Everything that the church has comes from heaven. Here you have the confirmation that you need in order to stand up to the enemies of the church. Her sacraments, her doctrine, and the other things, everything is celestial, holy, and pure. In such a way that between heaven and the church, there is continuous communication, never interrupted. That's because Jesus is the vine. And so it's his life that's being communicated all the time to the members of the church. As for the few religious who offered care and assistance to the lady, that I understood that few are those who defend the church with all of themselves, considering the evils that she receives as though given to themselves. The room in which she rested, made of stone, represented the solidity, the firmness, even the hardness, or we would say the immutability of the church in surrendering to nobody the rights that belong to her. John 14, 6, I am the way, the truth and the life. The dying lady who, with intrepidness and courage, allows herself to be beaten by the enemies, represented the church, which, while she seems to be dying, rises again, more intrepid. And how? Through the sufferings and through the shedding of the blood of martyrs. The true spirit of the church, always ready for mortification, as Jesus himself, the head of the church, is. So to give a different image of the church, St. Paul says that the church is like a body. Well, if the church is like a body, that's 1 Corinthians 12, then the head is in heaven and the body is on earth. And all the grace and the glory and the guidance and everything is coming from the head to the body. So now, October the 27th, 1903. Again, we come back to the subject of love, because the summary of the 36 volumes is divine will and love. Love is the only thing that's acceptable to God. I'm repeating now what you've had for four volumes. There's no other motive accepted than that we do things for love of God. I want to give you 1 John 4, 7, God is love. I want to give you Matthew 22, 36 to 40, where Jesus says that the whole scriptures are enclosed in these two commandments, to love God and to love your neighbor. And I want to give you Mark 12, 28 to 31. Now, there's lots more. As I was in my usual state, Louisa said, I saw my adorable Jesus for just a little, saying to me, my daughter, to accept mortifications and sufferings, and as penance and chastisement is praiseworthy. It's good. But it has no connection with the divine way of operating. Oh dear. In fact, I did much, I suffered much, but the way I had in all of this was only love for the Father and for human beings. Everything that Jesus said and did, the only motivation was love. So I want to give you 1 Corinthians 13:13, where Paul has been describing love, and then he says, what is left is faith, hope and love, and the greatest of these is love. And then in 1 Corinthians 14:1, he says, you must want love more than anything else. So it shows immediately, he said, whether the person has the way of operating and suffering in a divine manner, if it is love alone, that's the only accepted motivation that pushes her to do it. And the only reason why you would suffer is for love of Jesus. This is to love in a divine manner. If she has other ways, good and as they may be, they are always the ways of creatures. Therefore, they're low. And therefore, she will find in them the merit that a creature will acquire, not the merit that the Creator can acquire, because there's no union of ways. But if she has my way, that is suffering in union with the divine will, one with the divine will, and for love alone, the fire of love will destroy any disparity and inequality and will form one single thing between my work and that of the creature. So the divine way of doing it is to love with Jesus' love and to do everything only for love. So October 29th, 1903, when the soul has the character of the purpose of creation impressed within herself, Jesus repays her with part of the celestial happiness. Now notice with part, because we're on the earth. This morning my adorable Jesus made himself seen in my interior as if he had incarnated himself. Look at that. In my very person. And looking at me, he said, my daughter, when I see the character of the purpose of creation impressed in the soul, feeling satisfied with her because I see so well accomplished the work created by me, I feel a duty, or rather, not a duty. He immediately added, because in me there are no duties, but my duty, or my response is what he's trying to say, is a more intense love for her. And a more intense love to repay her, advancing for her part of the eternal happiness. So when he is able to see himself in us, and he can continue living his life on earth in us, what he does is that he gives us part of the eternal happiness we're going to have in glory. That is, I manifest to her intellect the knowledge of the divinity, that is, to know God, attracting her with the food of eternal truths, delighting her sight with my beauty, making the sweetness of my voice resound in her hearing. To her mouth, my kisses, to her heart, my embraces, and all my tenderness. And this corresponds to the purpose for which I created her, that is, to know me, love me, and serve me. And there's Jesus quoting our Penny Catechism. We were made to know, love, and serve God on this earth and be with him eternally in heaven. So, finding myself outside of myself, Louisa said, I saw the confessor. And I told him what Blessed Jesus had told me. I asked him whether it was according to the truth, and he said yes. Not only this, but he added that the divine message could be recognized well, or the divine teaching, because when God speaks and the soul relates it, the one who hears it, the one who listens, not only sees the truth, in other words, the grace is communicated to the person receiving this message, not only sees the truth of these words, but feels a movement in his interior which only the divine spirit can possess. So the priest is saying to her, the reason why I know that this is God's own teaching is that when I even hear it coming from you, I get the grace and the movement of the spirit as well. So now we come to the final piece in volume 5, and it's October the 30th, 1903. And again, we come back to the subject of peace. Now, over and over again, he comes back to faith and hope and love and peace and joy and union, and that we must strip ourselves and that we must lay down our will before his. And he tells us over and over and over again, hoping that we will actually take it in. This morning, Louisa said, since my adorable Jesus was not coming, I was thinking in my interior, who knows whether it's true that it was our Lord who was coming, or rather that it was the enemy to deceive me. Oh, she's back to that again. How could Jesus Christ leave me in such an ugly way without pity? She has been told for five volumes now why he doesn't come, and she still doesn't accept it. Now, while I was thinking of this, he made himself seen for a few instances, and raising his right hand, pressing his thumb on my mouth, said, be quiet. She knows. Be quiet, he said. And besides, would it be nice if someone who has seen the sun, that's the sun in the sky, only because he doesn't see it now, says that what he had seen is not the sun. So he's trying to show her what's wrong about her way of thinking. Would it not be more true and more reasonable if he said that the sun is hidden in the sky today? Because that's what we say. It's cloudy, but we know the sun is there because there's light coming through the cloud. I could not see him, Louisa said, but I felt that with his hands he was retouching me all over. That's your Philippians 1:6, continuing to complete the work. And he was rubbing my mouth, my mind, and everything to make me all shining. Since I couldn't see him, my mind continued to raise doubts. Now, Louisa doesn't seem to remember that at the end of John's Gospel, Jesus said to Thomas, Thomas, you believe because you can see me, but blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe. Also, we have St. Paul's teaching in Romans chapter 7. No, it's earlier than chapter 7. It's about chapter 4. He says that the just man lives by faith. And she keeps on demanding to actually see him. So she said, my mind continued to raise doubts, and he, making himself seen, said, you still don't want to stop? The Lord's getting tired of this. They've been around this roundabout a number of times. You want to make my work in you disappear? Because by doubting, you are not at peace. You're allowing this disturbance. Now, from volume one, he has told her that there must be no disturbance in her interior. You can have disturbance on the outside of you, but not in your interior. In your interior, you must have the peace that passes all understanding. That's Philippians 4:7. Because this peace, the one that passes all understanding, guards your heart and guards your mind in Christ Jesus, and therefore keeps the enemy at bay. He said, by doubting, you are not at peace. And since I am the fount of peace, that means the source of it, and he's the prince of peace. You have that from Luke chapter 2. He was proclaimed by the angels as the Prince of Peace. As the one who guides you does not see you at peace, you will cause him to doubt. So look at the trouble she's bringing on herself. And that is not that it is not the King of Peace who dwells in you. You do not want to be attentive. In other words, why don't you give me your attention? It's true that I myself do everything in the soul in such a way that without me she can do nothing. So there he's quoting John 15:5 himself. But it's also true that I always leave a thread of the will in the soul. That means you always have the freedom to choose. And when Louisa gets this thread, she uses it to go into all kinds of difficulties. So that she too may be able to say, I do everything of my own will. In other words, it is our choice to choose the Lord. It's our choice to follow him. It's our choice to put the self away to make room for love. It's our choice to get into the divine will and stay there. Everything is our choice. Just as when you took your spouse to the altar to marry him or her, it was your choice to do that. You had chosen them. So by being restless, Jesus said, you break the thread of union with me. Now, there is something you really have to look at. But you bind my arms in such a way that I am unable to work in you, waiting for you to put yourself at peace again. Now, we need to really look at this. In other words, the Lord has to wait until we put ourselves in order, in peace again, so that he can continue working in us, in order to make the thread of your will again and continue my work. To take the thread of your will again. In other words, when you allow this disturbance inside of you, you have to get back to that peace so that the Lord can continue his work in us. So there's the last message in volume 5, and the Lord giving us a warning that not to let a disturbance inside of us and not to let go of that peace that passes all understanding. And if we stay in that peace, then he will be able to continue his work and he will complete it if we allow him. So let us stop there.